chance to have a dream, to open and run a bakery. But they took a chance, took the sweets to the street. Now they all have places where I'd love to eat.
Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you doing? You hanging in there? I hope you're doing well. Hope everyone's baking up a storm this week. Hazem Toon is on the show this week. Hazem works at Zingerman's Bakehouse in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and has led a very interesting life up to and including his work at Zingerman's, making the good stuff and diving deep into fresh milled, stone milled, whole grain flours and what that can do to the lineup at Zingerman's. Yeah, so that's coming up in a couple of minutes. I'm excited for that. What else is happening? Shout out to all the folks that have been baking for the last week or so, doing fundraisers, trying to help folks in Ukraine who are dealing with their country being invaded, because that's what we do. With the invention of social media and the ways that we're all able to connect around the world, we do these fundraisers for big events, right? You know, you can organize a national Bakers Against Racism, like what was done last year, or national fundraisers and international fundraisers for folks in Ukraine or folks in Syria, that kind of thing. But I know for a fact this also happens right on your own street corner. You know, folks raising money for the people in their communities, getting the word out about things that need changing in your neighborhood, in your city, in your county, in your state, in your province, all of that. And that's what I love about bakeries. That's why I do this show in a way, right? It was like, why would a guy do a podcast about bakeries and bakery owners? Because they're important. That's why I do it, because bakeries are important. They are the bedrock. They are the foundation on the street corner in your neighborhood, feeding people all the time. And then when something needs doing, getting people together, raising funds, raising money, raising awareness, getting the word out about what needs happening in their communities. That's why I have such a soft spot in my heart for, you know, the old school brick and mortar bakeries, because they're also a gathering place and they are also a place with a bulletin board where you can see what's on the bulletin board and find out what's going on in the neighborhood and who needs help and how you can get involved. That's special to me. And so well done, everyone who got involved over the last week, helping the folks in Ukraine. The sad thing about how the world works is that probably in another 10 days, there's going to be another hotspot somewhere in the world. Someone's going to need some help and we're going to do it all again. And that's just what we do, because when people need help, we get together and we help them. So well done. My heart is full for all of the folks that got involved in the last week. Okay. Hazem Toon. Hazem's a really interesting fella, you know, started out his career as an engineer, you know, living large in the Bay Area, windsurfing, having the time of his life. And then he got bit by the bread bug, like some of us do, and took him on a journey from learning bread to going back to Cyprus, where he was born, baking for people out there, then coming back to the United States and joining up with the folks at Zingerman's and being a baker at Zingerman's and diving into the world of whole grains, fresh milled, stone milled flours, and bringing that to the Zingerman's lineup. And we talk about all of that. And I'm excited to share this with you. Really fun talk with an excellent fella, or an excellent talk with a really fun fella. Both are true. Both sides of that equation are true. Hazem Toon from Zingerman's Bakehouse in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Here we go.
Thank you for the invite. Glad to be talking to you.
My pleasure. Well, we have a mutual friend, Matt, I believe. And, uh-huh. You know, you really got to talk to Hazem here. How did he put it? He said, knowledgeable and curious. And you'll have a good chat. And I thought, well, that was pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah. Matt, I've met Matt. When was that? That was like 2014.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. At SFBI, we were both curious.
We were both, you know,
taking courses. We were like, how can we make this work? You know? So I think we've both come a long way.
Yeah. No kidding. Then. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And we stayed in touch. Yeah.
I've been, I was out at SFBI as well back in, it was 2008. Ended up, I did 3 courses back to back out there. I was out there for 3 weeks and it was pretty life-changing. As close as you know, baking university you can get to, well, that's not true. The closest I could get to folks who do like, you know, the CIA and stuff, but.
Right. Same here, you know, after I had, you know, quit my engineering job and all that. So I wasn't about to, you know, go into another university per se. So I was like, okay, maybe I can just check out SFBI. So that was a great way to get my feet wet and see what it's about. So it was great.
I'm glad to hear that folks from those experiences stay in touch, because there's still a couple of folks I remember from back in the day too, that you kind of, I don't know. Well, maybe that's the thing. I always think you spend time around the bench with somebody and you build some bonds there.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think about that for my work, current work, you know, at the bench.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, they're like my family now. I mean, they're like my second family, basically. I see them every day. And yeah, when you're shaping bread together, the conversation can go from how does this dough feel? Why is it acting like this? To, you know, to anything, basically, life stories, which is very cool.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I was looking at some old pictures today. I wrote an article for Baking Magazine, and they asked me for like a headshot. And I don't have a headshot. They said, do you have a headshot for when you're baking? It's like, well, no, it's not that no cameras allowed, but I don't think anyone wants to take my picture lately when I'm in the middle of doing it. But I found some pictures from, you know, back in the Orange Boot Bakery days. And so I found someone, I sent some, and started looking at all of the people that were around the bench in those pictures, and how, like, I stay in touch with so many of them, and they all look so young.
Right.
Like, that's the thing I know. Like, oh, we all look so young back then, you know, and it hasn't been that long, but it's like it's a certain point in time. So cool.
Right.
And I'm kind of curious. Well, I'm curious about a bunch of stuff. You come from like an engineering background before you got into baking, eh?
Yeah.
I started with a computer science degree. So I kind of went through that a little. Mm-hmm. I'm keen to hear from you sort of what was your first career like, and what was the driver for switching?
That's a great question. And it was that switch period was a big one for me to grapple with and figure out and settle in and be okay with, you know. Maybe you went through the same thing, but my dad is an architect, so I'm going to go back. So growing up, I've always been drawn to like drawing things. And I remember that creative process was very dear to me. There were two things that were really dear to me. One, actually, maybe three things. And I think this is maybe a combination of all of it. Three things. One was seeing my mom's cooking. You know, I'm from Cyprus in the Mediterranean, you know, but I didn't know anything else. So it was great. The second was the creative process, you know, seeing my dad do his thing. And then the other one was the sea, being by the Mediterranean. I was in love with the sea. And I remember at some point I was like, I want to be a marine biologist. That's what I want to do. And my parents are like, yeah, we're not sure if that's, you know, that's the right thing to do. Whatever, you can't make money with that. Da, 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 da. And I was like, okay, then maybe I'm going to be an architect like my dad. And I came to the United States back in 1995 with a scholarship. And there was no scholarship offered for architecture. So, and I was like, well, what's the closest to that? I'll go with civil engineering. Don't they like, you know, work with buildings and bridges and things like that? So that's what I did. And I went to University of Texas at Austin, which is a great town to be, similar to Ann Arbor right now.
Right. Yeah.
And I did that. And I quickly realized that, you know, I love the math, the science, chemistry, and all of biology, all of that. And it was great. But I quickly realized that it wasn't as, you know, creative as I thought it was going to be, like architecture in my young head back then. And then I kind of veered towards, you know, since I also loved biology, chemistry stuff, I veered towards environmental engineering. And that's kind of why I stuck with that. And I did my master's degree in that. And I continued that path. And that gave me kind of an outlet to being kind of, you know, use my, you know, sciencey brain, curious mind, and also be outdoors, nature, and all of that. I really like that. And I had an opportunity to go and work in the Bay Area. That was my first job. I was in Emeryville, California, lived in San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, and all of that. And I'm a big windsurfer. I love windsurfing. So it was just like heaven for me.
You sure? Can
imagine. Yeah, it was great. You know, it was great. My young years were awesome. But at the same time, there was a point I was, you know, and there were changes that were happening in the corporate world of where I was working. And that did not, you know, I guess, speak to my soul that much. There was a point I was like, you know, this is all great. You know, my office views, I had the Golden Gate Bridge in front of me and I could windsurf, I could do all of that. But I was like feeling restless. There were points in my head that I would like speak to myself, you know, I would rather be scrambling eggs right now. I want to like cook. That's what I want to do. And, you know, I kept cooking for my friends in the area. I had a lot of Turkish friends too and American friends too. And I kept cooking for them too. And it was becoming more and more of a passion. And, you know, being in the Bay Area was like a big eye opener. I'm like, wow, what's possible with food? You know, coming from the Mediterranean, you know, I was already exposed to great food, but not the kind that you would see in the Bay Area. So it was very novel for me. And I wanted to experience more and more of it. And the engineering part of things became more and more, how to put it, not as creative, like moving more and more away from that. You know, the higher you get in your career, what I was doing was, you know, consulting, environmental consulting. You start stepping away more and more from the field and you start, you know, getting into more managerial roles and all of that. That means more sitting at your desk, in your office. I was like, no, this is not it. And at the same time, I had this dear friend that I keep thinking about. Maybe she comes across this podcast and she'll reach back out to me because I've been trying to find her. My good friend, my French friend, who was also an engineer like me, and we got recruited at the same time. I remember that. She also loved great food and she would invite me sometimes over to her place and we would have a great baguette from Acme Company and we would have, you know, garlic brie and some good wine. You know, we loved it. In the little neighborhood that where she used to live, which was Piedmont in Oakland, California, there used to be a restaurant called Dopo, D-O-P-O. Now they're closed, but instead they have a Roman pizzeria, actually. The Polara Pizzeria. And anyway, she told me that I should take you to this restaurant because their pizzas are great. They're a small neighborhood restaurant and their food is amazing and all of that. I was like, okay, let's go. So she took me there and she knew that I was really passionate about cooking and I wanted to kind of get into cooking. And I even at some point went to California Culinary Academy orientation, thinking that that's something I could do. As soon as I learned that it would cost me another $60,000-$70,000 to do it, I was like, this is crazy. And I told my dad about it. He's like, are you kidding me? Your mom can teach you how to cook. So that was a response I got. So I left it at that. So I was like, what's the other way to do it? Maybe get into restaurants. So I think I had, you know, mentioned the idea to my friend. And she said, well, let's take you to this restaurant. And we go and we're eating. The owner, John Smolovitz, he's such a great guy and I miss him. He came by at our table. He was the owner together with his wife. But he said, yeah, I hear, Hazem, you love cooking. Why don't you come and, you know, cook with us, do some prep work with us on Saturday. I was like, really? It's like, yeah, come on Saturdays. And that's how it clicked. So, and you know, this restaurant was just open, like kind of the opposite of that. Super, I mean, they're driven, but that super driven, like, you know, hot kitchen style.
Yeah, yeah.
Felt totally opposite of that, like open, you know, natural light coming in, small, super high quality, but super friendly, rustic, all of that. It all spoke to me. So I did that for several years on Saturdays. And it was just like, it was great. I loved it. And that's kind of how I started getting into this like more professional kitchen environment. And around that time, when I was living in San Francisco, Peter Reinhardt came to Sur La Table in San Francisco for a pizza course. So I was like, okay, I love cooking, and that was a store that I frequented. So I went and saw him talk about the dough, the fermentation process, and the pizza making and all of that. And then this little fire started in me. Because, I mean, I was already cooking, but this pizza thing, the dough thing, was starting to happen now. So I would invite my friend. After that, I would invite my friends over, make a big mess, try to make pizzas for everyone. And to this day, I have friends that talk about my pizza making, basically. And I think I've come a long way on that one, too. But anyway, that and that, the Dopo experience, all of that, and I started pushing me in that direction, away, more and more away from engineering. And I also had a chance to go back home for a couple of years. And that was kind of a slower period in time in my life for me, where I was like, I mean, I was still doing some consulting work there, but everything was on Cyprus time, let's say. Everything felt slower. You know, here in the US, I'm used to just like work, work, work. You know, I would be in the office past 5 o'clock and people would be like, what are you doing? Go home. Just relax. Enjoy your time. Take an hour long lunch break. I'm like, what? You don't eat in front of your computer? No, we don't. Because I have been away from that, you know, that style of living for a while, that, you know, I had to be reminded, you know, where I'm from, what my culture does. So it was a great opportunity to get back into that rhythm. And that's when I grabbed Peter Reinhardt's Crust and Crumb book, and we had a mud brick oven in our backyard, and I started like, you know, playing around with making bread. I was making pizzas already and I was cooking already, but that's when bread making started kicking in, and I realized, wow. And then once I started making some sourdough breads from his Bread Baker's Apprentice book, that's when it like started kicking in. I'm like, wow. There's flavor in this. There's instant satisfaction. There's creativity involved. There is science. The science part of it like spoke to me so much. And Peter Reinhardt, as you may know, he's such a great teacher, educator, and the way he talks about the process was just like speaking to me. So that's how I started really getting into it. And we came back to the United States. I was doing a little more consulting, but my wife was like, Hazem, you look like you're really miserable. I think you should just call it. That's it. But it was hard for me, you know. I knew, you know, I'm like, well, this is what I'm trained to do. I should stick with it. You know, I'm at a good place. I've got good salary, da-da-da-da-da. And we just had a baby. But, you know, I guess my wife was, you know, she understood me. So she's like, quit, you know, be done with it and make the change.
It's so awesome that you had the opportunity back in Cyprus, at least where there's other people around you modeling a different lifestyle, right? Yeah. And that you could do it differently. I know that was such a big barrier for me when, okay, so not the Bay Area, I'm up in Saskatchewan, but the same thing in a corporate job. And it's sort of every message you got was you're on the path that everybody wants, right? Like you're on the you should be happier, right? You know,
yes,
like,
why are exactly
you happy doing this?
Yeah.
And there are no examples around you. Everyone else is singing from that same song sheet. So
right.
To take that breakaway, like I'm even finding it out here on Vancouver Island, which is not mellow in the longest stretch, but boy, it can be. It can be very, because you're around nature and you're around the water and it's like the sun's shining, we got to go. Like, let's get out there, you know, like you can't.
Yeah.
And, you know, back in Saskatchewan, it was like, no, I ate a lot of lunches at my desk for sure.
Yeah. And I felt that more because we moved from the Bay Area to Michigan. because my wife is from here and we were going to have a baby. So she wanted to be close to family. And I said, okay. But I felt that more and more here. You know, it's a little darker here too, not like the Bay Area. And people were spending, I felt like, more time at their in their offices and at their desks. It became, you know, relatively speaking, a little depressing. I was like,
oh, yeah.
This is it. I can't do this anymore.
I totally get it.
Yeah. That's when I stopped and I went back to Cyprus again. I said, let's go. And I'm going to do my own baking thing. I'm going to learn. That's when I went to SFBI. That's when I met Matt. So, because I was like, I need to learn a little more about
this. Right. So you make the decision and then go to SFBI and then went back to Cyprus. And actually, that's where you got into it, baking full time.
Right. I mean, you can call it full time. Yeah. I mean, I was like, okay. Kind of living a dream life.
Yeah.
I was by the sea. I would windsurf. I would bake, you know, go hikes. And, you know, my wife was really nice. She worked and we had a little one that we were taking care of. I mean, it was a great time. And that's when I think that's when I started discovering the Instagram concept and being able to connect with others and start really learning. And, you know, not just through the Instagram per se, but through practice. And I nowadays, sometimes, you know, how Google reminds you or gives you photos from a decade ago or years ago. And I would have these like bread photos and I would look at them and I'm like, oh my God, these are so underproof. What was I thinking and whatever, you know? So I was literally learning back then. And it was a great opportunity. And I felt like I learned quite a bit that I was able to come back to the US and, you know, and do what I'm doing right now. So,
yeah. Yeah. If I think everybody worries about what's out on the internet coming back from the past to bite them. And, you know, you always hear stories of like, entertainers being taken down by old tweets that came back to haunt them. But I'm right with you. There are pictures of like my early loaves from, you know, 15 years ago that I was really happy with at the time. I was so happy I took a picture, right?
Right.
It's
right,
like, if, right. It's like, I don't want to see them anymore.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, it happens for all of us for sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and I want to circle back a bit just because you mentioned Peter Reinhardt and I know for, that Bread Baker's Apprentice book was the one that turned it on for me as well, right? Just the stories between the recipes and every sidebar. And that was like my first exposure to baker's percentages and that the whole thing. I was like, oh, like that book. Well, and you know, Peter, right? Like he's a philosopher as well, right? And so those two paths going through that book really got me because I bought into both the philosophy and then sort of saw the possibility of what you could do, which was totally outside what I'd seen in real life. Right. You know, it was like, oh, there's a whole world that opened up. Yeah. I think it's really neat how there's a handful of folks in the baking world that have pretty much touched everybody. Like there's everybody I've talked to who's met, you know, one of these folks or been influenced by them. So yeah, that's really neat.
Yeah.
Really neat. It's cool that you could get exposed to that stuff at the start as well.
Right. Right. And I was getting exposed to, you know, not here, but in Cyprus. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I met him here, but then, you know, over there I was doing, you know, his stuff and, you know, my family loved it. And, you know, I think, now thinking back, things happening kind of at the right time and, you know, having the push, the support, all of that. I think it all lined up.
Yeah. Nice. Well, and then coming back to the States, I guess for the third time now, again, to get closer to your wife's family, was that sort of the,
how
did you go about making the move to Zingerman's then when you got back to the States?
Yeah. When I got back to the States, I guess two things were on my mind. So I was going to either do my own thing,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, quite a jump, or I wanted to join a team, you know, where, you know, I could really learn something new and have fun and, you know, make a good living because I still had a family to take care
of. Sure.
In Michigan, I was looking around. We thought about Traverse City. That didn't quite pan out. even though we love the Traverse City area, it just didn't, you know, jive with our lifestyle, I guess. And then came back down, and two bakers were in my mind, either Zingerman's. And the thing is, oh, I forgot to tell you, between the Cypress stints, I did have a chance, given my, you know, Saturday's experiences at Dopo, I was brave enough to come to Zingerman's while I was doing my consulting job and when we just had our baby, and tell them, you know, I was wondering if I could just come here and work here on Saturdays. And they gave me, you know, Frank's card, Frank Carollo.
Yeah, yeah.
His card. So I emailed him and it was like, yeah, come on, work with us on Saturdays. And I did that for a few months. So that's how I, you know, started kind of getting a sense for Zingerman's. And to be honest, it was a little scary. I was like, oh my God, this is way beyond my league. But, you know, I did have a sense and I did make that connection, which was great. And then so that stopped. So when I came back again, back to Michigan, so I was considering two places, either Zingerman's or the Field and Fire Bakery in Grand Rapids. I'm not sure if you've heard of them.
No, I haven't heard of them. No.
Yeah, Shelby Keeler. He used to be one of the bread managers at Zingerman's, and he was also the principal at our baking school, and super passionate baker, very curious guy like me. So I was going to either work with him or Zingerman's. You know, I met with him too, which is awesome. He has this beautiful wood-fired oven bakery in Grand Rapids. But yeah, I ended up choosing Zingerman's. And so that's how I made the jump. And
wow,
it's been quite a journey. And
yeah,
you know, I feel like I'm enjoying it more and more. And I'm glad that I stuck with it.
Yeah, I'm glad that that you said the word brave, because that's exactly what I was thinking. You know, there's so many folks that I've talked to, and then in my own experience, where things like that Saturday experience at Dopo, and then just to get into the swing of it, and just to get into the rhythms of the place, because it stops it from being just a dream, and you're actually like living in it, right? Because dreams, both the good and the bad, get made up. Right? You didn't get invented in your mind. And so here it's like, just go and do it. And like, what a break that was. And then to say, well, if I did it at one place, it's like, why not offer to do it at another place? That's really cool. Like, because I know I would find it extremely intimidating to walk into, you know, even now, just like, you know, having done my own thing or whatever, and say, oh yeah, like, how about we team up? I always really struggle with that, you know? But just to go in and say, hey, let's do, I'll come on Saturdays. What do you think? And good for you. Good for you.
Yeah. It was, yeah, it's been an adventure. I can tell you that. Yeah.
Tell me about what you're doing at Zingerman's now, or how long have you been there now?
Let's see. I started the holiday season of 2016. So,
okay.
Yeah. 6 years. Yeah.
6 years. Yeah. And so, tell me about sort of what's it like for you there? What do you do there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a lot of fun. So I came there with a vision, you know, and at Zingerman's, we, you know, visioning is big for us. And the thing is, right before I had left for Cypress Baking in Cypress, I remember having a family dinner, kind of a goodbye dinner at the Roadhouse for the first time, which is also a Zingerman's restaurant. And I had gotten one of Ari's books about visioning. And I remember right before we left, my wife saw Ari, and her being herself, she talked to him about me. And I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, he's going to go back to Cypress. He wants to be a baker and da 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 da. And he bought your book. Can you sign it for him? He signed it for me. And he was like, why don't you just come work with us? You know, and then, you know, fast forward several years, you know, I come back with a vision in my hand saying, you know, this is kind of stuff I want to do, which is like freshly milled stuff. And, you know, Dave Miller and Josie Baker, way back then from my visit in San Francisco at SFBI, they were like big inspirations. So that stuck with me. And I was able to do some fresh milling in Cypress too, because I had my family bring me over. My American family bring me over a grain maker mill, so I could mill stuff in Cyprus. And once I realized the potential of flavors with that, I was like, oh my God, this is, I need to be doing this. So I came to them, to Frank and Amy with that. And, you know, maybe we can open up another small bakery, you know, doing just small scale, this quality, da 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 da. And they're like, you know, this is great, but, you know, we can't really open up another bakery. Why don't you just come work with us to do that? Because we've been wanting to do milling for a while now, but we haven't had a chance. We haven't had anybody, you know, that can lead the charge. So why don't you come do that? Look at our current breads, work on, you know, improving the breads, you know, work on creating new breads and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, sounds super intimidating, but I'm going to go ahead and do it anyway.
Yeah.
So that's how I started. And, you know, that's kind of what I've been doing. So I'm involved in production. So I lend a hand. So I'm part of the team. So especially during the holidays, during the very busy times, I'm on the floor helping out with production, which is an amazing experience. And, you know, there is no way around to, you know, understanding the breads, how they behave, and, you know, going into the recipes and understanding why we do the certain things we do and how you can improve them. You know, that's a great way to do it. And obviously connecting with people, having fun at the bench, all of that. So that's one thing. The other thing that I do is that, you know, we're still doing it is, you know, we got our hands on two new American stone mills. We hit started without with the 26 inch one. Now we have a 40 inch one as well. So we do fresh milling. So I kind of help us kind of nudge us in that direction, work more and more with freshly milled flours, anything from, you know, incorporating them into our existing line of products, which is a lot, as you may know, but also, you know, create new things with freshly milled flours. The other part is I get to teach about baking bread. I call them mindful baking series, you know. So I try to share basically what I know. And we know, you know, with baking, there are sort of like guidelines and that have been passed from, you know, generations to generations, stuff that you learn at SFBI, stuff that you learn from each other, stuff that you learn at the bench. And also there is what works is what's working, and that's why you do it.
Yeah.
There is that too. But also, I'm an engineer by heart too. So there is that aspect of it that I try to learn a lot on and pass it on to people so that we understand why we do what we do. Because we can get so lost in the day-to-day because, you know, we have very strong systems and it's quite a bit of production. So you got to be like, go, 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 go. There's a super strict timeline and we got to stick with it. So my teaching is kind of a great opportunity for, you know, for the folks that are attending the class, not only from the bakehouse, but also from other Zingerman's businesses that may be selling our breads or interacting with guests about the breads. For us, it's going to slow down and learn more about the flours, the grains, the milling, the breads, the fermentation, the sourdough process, and all of that. So I do that as well. And I also get to teach. So this is kind of more of an internal teaching, but I also get to teach to our outside guests that come to our bake school.
Oh, okay.
Which is our baking and culinary school. So I get to work with our wonderful instructors there. Like we do a natural 11 bread class, like a 2-week long virtual class that had started with the pandemic. Now it's, you know, we're doing the, I don't know, maybe the sixth or the seventh rendition of it. So we spent 2 weeks with students online, just checking in on our starters and feeding them. And we do like 2 full bake days. So I get to do that too. And, you know, on top of all that, I think there's a lot of learning that happens at Zingerman. So there is the, you know, we value education quite a bit. Like we want to see ourselves as an education destination. We you know, ever imperfectly, we strive for that. So we get to learn a lot, not just about baking, but about, you know, about business philosophies, about beliefs, about, you know, I always say to myself, I'm so grateful that I not only get to bake, but I do all these other stuff so that I can grow professionally, but also personally quite a bit. So it's been kind of very helpful in my own personal life as well. So I do a lot.
Yeah. Well, it seems like Zingerman's is you walk the talk in terms of values and stuff as well, right? It's like that we're gonna, it's not only about cranking out product, but it's very clearly like it's, we're going to build a business that works here. Right. And that's what I like. I've got Ari's books as well. Right. And it's, and I love it, like, because it's the, we can make a successful business, but we can do it in a way that, that feeds us in all facets, right. Feeds our soul as well as just lines our pockets and feeds our bellies or whatever, you know? Right. So
yeah, you said it really well. I mean, feeds us in all aspects. I mean, I literally get, you know, free bread every day that I work, but also I get to feed my soul, my brain, my curiosity. You know, it's like some days I'm like, pinch me, is this a little bit of a dream? Well, this is a dream that I get to create. And that's what we say, you know, we want to allow the individuals that work with us to kind of speak to their dreams and hopefully help them realize it. It was quite a bit of a culture shock, to be honest, when I first started. So I was like, what's going on here? Why isn't anybody on my head doing this to me?
Right.
It was strange. And it took me for the better part of a couple of years to realize really what's going on and how things are working. And once I, you know, realized that and started like opening up, you know, being open to receiving, that's when I realized, wow, this is good.
Oh, so neat. Yeah.
And I should stick with it. And it's hard work for all of us, but you know.
And no illusions about that. It's even when everything's working perfectly, it's hard work doing that. And yet if you can remove some of those kind of barriers that we put up in the office sometimes, right? You know, it'll help you focus on doing the good hard work and not right. Dealing with the bad stuff. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to make another assumption, but just with your engineering background and sort of the systems that you need to be in place to run big production and that kind of stuff, there must be a decent connection with how you think as well within that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good assumption. I'm not sure that I am that, you know, I recognize it and I love learning about it, but it's not something that, again, speaks to me, just the production part of it. That's why we want to speak to our strengths, you know, at Zingerman's, that's how we see it.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that strengths can also lead to weaknesses, but you know, we have other folks that are very strong on that side of things, you know, like Amanda Benson, for example. She's our bread manager. She's the bread production manager. And I'm amazed every time. I'm like, how do you like put this all together so that we can produce, you know, on a very busy day, 15,000 pieces of bread? And how do you juggle the staff that's moving around and there's so many bread to put, you know, to make from the mixing all the way to the baking end of things? I love seeing it, observing it, seeing it flow. But trying to, you know, analyzing the whole thing, that doesn't speak to me. But nitpicking it, little pieces, bits and pieces there, trying to improve something, yes, I'm all for it. But I'm not for the big pieces of it. And I think that's kind of the role I think I carved out for myself. And then maybe, you know, Frank and Amy kind of had in mind that can evolve into what I do right now.
Sure. Yeah. No, that really good point, because when you were talking about then teaching and sort of teaching the folks that are on the line, sort of here's what you're seeing, or when you're talking about fresh mill flour or bringing in new breads or adjusting the breads, I kind of got this sense of, okay, well, we're going to move off the line for a sec here. And you just kind of relaxed a bit. It was like, okay, and now let's talk about what it is that's going on here. And it's like, oh, neat difference. It, just in that it's like, oh, okay, so we can talk about this and sort of let's understand what we're all feeling here. And now how do we go put it back? How do we make that happen on the line? And maybe there's some folks that can help figure that part out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, that's that's the fun and the challenge at the same time. You know, putting all these learnings into all this information into action. We try our best, and we have, you know, very strong systems in place. And sometimes we, you know, try and adjust those systems or create new ones so that we can make it all successful. And sometimes, you know, it takes. Sometimes it's like this, but sometimes more than sometimes it takes a lot longer than you think it should take. And, you know, you got to stick with it. And that's kind of what we try to do.
Yeah. Even at Orange Boot Bakery, like at our bakery, we had that experience, right, where you'd want to bring on a new product with the four of us, and how in the heck are we going to fit this in without us all working overtime to make it happen? Cause you can't stretch time. Right. And I always think that the folks that can do that at a, you know, factor of 10 or factor of 100 of what we were doing, they're pretty amazing. But when we would get stuck, we could pull it back and say, okay, but what are we really trying to do here? And it's kind of bring it back to some first principles. And sometimes that would help us break a new path through, you know, and it sounds like that's sort of what you bring in terms of a little bit of the why. Why are we trying to do this new thing? And let's go from there.
It's all part of the, I mean, I go back to the vision part of it, you know, why we want to do what we want to do. Also, you know, our mission, you know, repetition is key. And there are breads we have been making for more than two decades now. So talk about repetition. I mean, that's the repetition. And it's funny. I'm the kind of person who likes to change things like this.
Yeah.
That's a creative process for me. That's what I love about it. But with bread, you need to stick with it for a while at least so that you can see that it's working or it's not working, and then adjust tiny bits, you know? So I get to kind of experience that, you know, there's that side of things, but also, like you said, you try to introduce something new, but then you got to make space for it. So there is that piece too. So it's very interesting.
So in the 6 or so years that you've been there, how have things changed in terms of, you know, fresh milling and more whole grains and that kind of stuff in terms of either the product line or sort of how customers are receiving it, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we always talk about it. Like I follow Andrew at New American Stone Mills, and I ring a little bell in my head every time he ships out another mill to someone, right? Because it seems like it's really booming. How's it being received from customers?
You know, I think we have a mix. There are people who would literally be saying, "You ruined my pie crust. What did you do?" we didn't ruin anything. It's you're just tasting the wheat. I mean, or what did you put in the scone? Is it corn? No, it's not corn. It's wheat. You're tasting the wheat. So, I mean, we have reactions like that to people who are like, wow, this is mind blowing. This is, yeah, give us more. It's all a balance for us. Like, you know, there are breads and we do traditional, you know, full flavored foods, obviously. So where does that tradition meets the innovation? And the funny thing, the ironic part of innovation is kind of like going back in time and grabbing that stone milk flour and putting it into our products. But the funny thing is people have gotten used to more of the refined stuff, which is not bad for, you know, I'm not saying that it's still full flavor. It's just different.
Yeah.
So we kind of get to experience that. And for us, the key is educating the customers. So once you start educating them, then we have more and more people getting on board. So yeah, like I said, there are people who love it and there are people who, you know, love to resist it. And there are those who are kind of, yeah, whatever, just bring it on and we will still eat your brownie, for example. I mean, we make a blondie that has, you know, a lot of our pastries are getting touched by freshly milled products.
So nice.
We see it as, so, you know, there are a few ways you can do it. So one is introducing new items. That's, you know, that's really fun, but also challenging in terms of, you know, production where you fit it in. So there is that piece of it. And then the other part you can do is you can have a whole variety of things that we make for pastries and for breads as well. Well, we can use those existing products as a canvas to start injecting freshly milled flowers. So we're doing that as well, and we have done really well with pastries. And you know, pastries can be certain pastries. You know, if you make a croissant or a whole grain, people will
they'll know.
Yes, they'll know. If you're doing it with a brownie, they may not know as well. I mean, we as bakers, of course, we taste these things and we do numerous tests to make sure there is a difference actually, that we can taste it. We can do it such that we are trying to highlight the flavors of the grain in a product, in an existing product, or we can put it in there and it will not cause people to scream, basically, and it will still be a great product. I mean, there will be an improvement. We're not going to do it just for the sake of doing it. There will be an improvement, but people are not going to be like, what did you do to my brownie kind of a thing? So we have those avenues, which is great. And I want us to do more and more. It's just that, you know, it's a slow process. So, and we got to be patient with it. And the same thing with breads. We're working on it. We have some whole, you know, all whole grain items. We have this like whole grain green olive focaccia that we make right now. It's on vacation, but we're going to bring it back, hopefully. We have the country miche, which is all the kai extraction, and you have the buckwheat, the spelt, the rye, you know, lots of complex flavors going on. We have this walnut sage bread, which is all whole grain. The cool thing is that we have a lot of natural leavened bread, so we can play around with our starters and injecting them with more and more whole grain. So we have been working on that. We have this other one of our best-selling white breads, a rustic Italian. We are like toying with the idea of starting to introduce whole grains into that bread. I mean, and the cool thing is for us, I mean, I always go back. Number one is flavor. You know, for me, that speaks to me and that speaks to all of us. And without the flavor, I mean, who's gonna buy it anyway? So flavor is one, but then once you start using this, you know, the freshly milled grains, you are, you know, there's a trickle effect and affecting the local grain economy. That's what I really care about too. So even if you can be black or white, you can be all just going to do whole grain, which I have a lot of respect for. I mean, Seilu Bakery, Evelyn Crackers. I mean, I love that. I love their stuff. But we already have, you know, a big clientele basically that's been coming with us for years and years. You can just like switch on them like that. So even if we did like 20%, even if you did 30% on one of your best-selling items, it's a huge dent, you know? So sometimes I'm hard on myself. I'm like, why don't we go all the way? But, you know, it's not, I'm learning to be more open to, you know, not just black or white, but kind of be in between and kind of nudge the line more and more, ever so slowly, and in a very flavorful way, pun intended, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. Because that, even with some of the brioche type sweet doughs and stuff that I make, I've been adding more and more whole grain flour. I don't have a mill, but I'm buying stone milled flour locally, right? And I'll add that in, and it just like turns another light on, you know?
Right.
And I know that I'm doing it, but you know, the people that I'm sharing the bread with, they notice it. They go, oh, this tastes really good today. Like what's changed and stuff. And it's like, and I just think of it as like, I'm just, oh God, I was going to say garnish. It is so far removed from a garnish, but it's like, it's like when you make the, when you really cook down the sauce well, as opposed to just doing something fast, right? You know, it's that difference. It's that depth of flavor.
Yep. You said it.
That's going to get folks to where they're going to notice it if it's not there, and then say, okay, what happened? And then you've kind of won, right? And I like what you said about bringing it back to the local grain economy and stuff as well, right? Because here's a way that you can use a much wider variety of things,
yeah,
and bring that in and put it in your baking as well, right?
Yeah.
That I'm still reflecting on sort of the food shortages that different folks have had with COVID over the last couple of years, right? And it's just sort of pockets and different things, you know, and all the yakking about the supply chain and stuff last year, you know, and it's like, you know, you're in Michigan, but like I was in Saskatchewan. It's like, it's all here. especially for what we bake. Like, it's all here, right? Like, I might not be able to get local walnuts, but I can sure as heck get local flour in and tons of variety. So let's use it all. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Washtenaw County, where we are, it was one of the, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it was like the number one wheat producing county in the United States. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Because we have the Huron River too.
Right.
So there were a lot of mills, you know, milling. And sometimes it's so ironic. We may have guests come over and be like, you know, I have a little mill, but I am having a difficult time finding grain. Where can I find wheat?
It's
everywhere. And yeah, and the diversity. Yeah. I mean, the other day we produced some colorful tags for our different flour bins, and that we lined them up. There were like five of them. Like, you have the hard red, soft white, Durum, spelt, rye, and hopefully we're going to add more. But it's, yeah, like you said, it's just, it opens it up, you know, it's wonderful.
Well, and then with a company like your size, I have to think it's going to encourage the growers to try the new thing, try growing it. You've got a market for it, right? Like, you know, our bakery in Saskatchewan was pretty small. We had two amazing local millers who were also farmers and stuff, and we would take whatever they had and grow it. But, you know, they're sort of like, well, okay, but I got to find a lot. If I'm going to put a field in this variety of spelt or whatever, I got to find a lot of places for it to go. Right.
I mean, even for us, like I said, you know, it's a slow process for us, but even for us, I mean, we've been working with farmers now. Some farmers are like, well, that's so little. You need more. So there's that other interesting aspect, you know, the scale that, where Amy Holleran talks so beautifully in her book, The New Breadbasket, which, by the way, I was reading in Cyprus when I was baking in Cyprus. That's why I was like so excited about this stuff. But anyway, yeah, the scale, you know, that's the other interesting aspect of things. You know, we would have farmers that are like, well, okay, I can grow this stuff for you, but I don't have the equipment. I don't have the infrastructure to clean it for you. And then I would try and connect them with another, you know, with our miller who has the equipment that can clean it for him. So there is that kind of juggling to do in this whole process.
You're recreating systems that existed, bringing them back at that small scale. Whereas electric cars, they're trying to get, you know, we need the charging stations, different points there. What you need mills at different points. You need grain cleaners at different points, you know, silos at different points. Yeah. It's sort of rebuilding the network.
Yep. I mean, and thankfully we have had a few millers over the years that we've been working in, and another great one, Grand Traverse Culinary Oils or Culinary Flours out of Traverse City. We've been working with them for a while. So has been our miller. And then, thankfully for Janie's Mill, you know, in Illinois, they've been a great resource for us and, you know, for everybody else in that area. It's good, you know, having folks like Janie's Mill and also, you know, having your mills on site. It's been a good journey, and hopefully it will take off more and more. I get excited whenever people start talking about freshly milling their flours. I mean, I've always like questioned it. I'm like, okay, farmers markets, we're selling lettuce from the fields in that area. Okay. We're selling meats grown and raised in that area. Okay. Well, what about the bread? Oh yeah, it's a local bakery. Well, okay. Where is the flour coming from? Well, we don't know. It's flour.
Yeah.
That's been always like, I think Amy Holleran, again, she was talking about this in her book. But yeah, that's been kind of on my mind, and you know, I want us to be able to say, okay, yeah, this flour, which tastes amazing, by the way, is from around here. We know where it's coming from.
Yeah, and it's as valuable as that locally grown head of lettuce, kind of thing, or you know, it's as special as those local strawberries that are only there for like 3 weeks of the year, and you run for them, right? You know. And then the rest of the year, yeah, we're either doing, I guess you're supposed to do without, or you get the California ones, but you know, you know, it goes, and you just wait for May again. Yeah. So cool. It's so goofy. It's like, I'm such a fan of Zingerman's from afar. Like, I've only ever been there once. Right. back when I was working at Sastel, long before the bakery, the corporate library had one of Ari's books on customer service. And I got that, and that was the first time I'd ever heard of Zingerman's. And I was like, whoa, what is going on there? And then I've got an aunt and uncle. They're in Tecumseh. So I've been up to Ann Arbor once. We were out to see them and stuff, right? I've got nostalgia for a place I've been to once.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool.
The energy is palpable. You know, it's real. And like I said, sometimes I'm like, I'm pinching myself. This is like, it's real. And if you're, like I said, for a lot of folks, it can be a little bit of a shock, especially, you know, once, I mean, you recognize, I mean, that's what we say, you know, all individuals come with their own beliefs about the world, mm-hmm. how things work, mm-hmm. and they may have a lot of baggage or knowledge mm-hmm. from their past lives, from their previous work experiences, and they come with that expecting things are going to be like that too. And I was carrying that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And once you shake that off and you start opening up, you realize, wow, this is really cool stuff. And they walk the talk. That's like you're saying. So,
yeah, so. I have that same experience with this group that I work with called Akimbo. And they, same kind of a thing. It was like folks that I always wanted to work with, got a chance to do some work with them and coach some workshops and that. And I kept waiting for something to shift, right? It's like, you know, because I had this idea of this is the type of place I wanted to work. And it was exactly what I was expecting and more so, and I was getting pushed in that and then I finally realized, and it was about 2 years, and I realized, oh no, this is actually how we're going to do it here. And it's like, and then you just get to like, just burst open and be your full self. And so,
Your full self. I mean, you just said it so well, be your full self. And it was hard for me, you know, switching from engineering to this.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I would look through we have this like window where you can see inside the shop, and you're on the bench covered in flour. I'm like, I could be that other person on the other side of the window. And look at me now. So it took me a while. I'm like, what am I doing with myself? Is this like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
And now, like being able to do what I do by being my full self.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, you know,
because
the most rewarding thing.
Because you can set aside those other stories that you were about how the one behind the glass is the one that's made it, not the one that's covered in flour. It's like, but I'm actually happy here. Right. You know? And it's like I'm actually happy here and not feel guilty that you're like, you know, that's my dad, like for him, he sat me down. I was like, you know, the best thing you can do, you get yourself a government job and you keep your head down for 30 years and get the pension, right? And
that's what I got. That's the same with me.
Yeah. 20 years later and I'm miserable. And it's like, well, we're going to open this bakery. He's like, oh yeah, I could never work in an office. He said to me, I said, well, where were you when I was 18 saying that's the thing to do? Like, right? Yeah. Oh yeah. But you take other people's stories and you make them your own story.
Yeah.
And then you start believing it and you can't figure out why it doesn't fit you, you know?
Right.
So yeah. Ah, awesome.
So I feel blessed.
Yeah. Good for you. That's great. And have you made it back to Cyprus lately or?
Yeah, I was there last year for a little over a month. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good for you.
Visiting, you know, COVID and stuff.
Yeah.
Down, but then, you know, I was able to get back out there.
And yeah.
Hopefully we'll go again this summer. Yeah.
Oh, good. Good for you.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, hey, well, thanks so much for taking the time.
Of course.
This has been so much fun. It's been great to get to know you a bit.
Yeah. Finally, it's great, you know, putting a face to your voice and getting to talk to you. It's been great. Thank you so much.
Lovely. Yeah. I'm still impressed that anybody listens to this. So it's, would you say that? It's like, oh, wow, really? Cool.
Yes, we do. Thank you, Mark. We really appreciate it.
Right on. Thanks. Well, there you go. Hey, what a talk. What a great fella. You know, I really need to turn this into more of a culture podcast because I should have spent the entire time just talking about life in Cyprus because it sounded amazing and I want to learn more and I want to know more about everything he did over there. But then everything else about Hazem is so darn interesting that we went down other paths instead.
And so I don't know, maybe I'll do a Bakeries of the World series, and we'll just find out what life's like in all of these places where everyone has lived and baked, you know, the folks that have been on the show, because that'll be a lot of fun. With this talk, I really liked the part right at the end where we were talking about this shift from, you know, his engineering job to working at a place like Zingerman's and the culture there, and how difficult it is for folks to go against sort of traditional, you know, I'll call it traditional ways of thinking, and say, you know, Hazim, well, I think Hazim's younger than I am, but, you know, we're both from a time where we were going after the ideal of what it was supposed to be to make your way in the world back in the 90s and early 2000s. And that kind of thing was, you know, you get a job at a up and coming company. My goodness, he was in the Bay Area. That was the center of the universe. And at that time, and the world was structured, so that was where you would want to go. And it seemed just irrational to say goodbye to all of that and to let that go to get covered in flour and start working with bread. But there's something to be said for doing work that feeds your entire soul. Sometimes that's work in an office, and I'm not begrudging folks that work in offices and folks that are actual engineers or, you know, computer programmers or what have you. They're needed as well. It makes my heart just open up to hear someone like Hazim, who's found an industry and a way of life and a place to work that feeds all of him and brings joy to all of him. That's pretty awesome. I think that's kind of what that's the most I can hope for all of us, right? Is that we get to do work that we love that you know, feeds our bellies and feeds our soul at the same time. So it was great having this conversation. Filled me full of hope. I'm going to go see if it can last the entire week until I'm back with another conversation with another baker and share it with you. Until next week, have a great week. Bake lots, work hard, feed the people. Care for the folks in your neighborhood. Care for the folks around the bench. Happy baking. Bye-bye.